some logical
point. Yes, logical perspective.
Somebody who can actually help, because yes, that's not complaining, that's actually looking for a solution.
Exactly. You sit down with that person and you say, are you open? You actively ask that person whether or not they have the capacity yeah. at this moment to mm-hmm. listen to whatever it is that you want to listen to. Most of the time for that, for me, that's my brother. Are you open? They say yes. You talk, you analyze, you clear things out, and then you come to a conclusion, and then you realize that like 75% of all those negative thoughts that you had, they just belong in the trash can. You're yeah. either hungry or sleepy yeah. or overworked, or you were burnt out, or
mm-hmm. that's actually a very nice you're just a jerk. Point you mentioned, to have someone like a shoulder. You know, we all have that experience when mm-hmm. we bear our soul out for somebody, mm-hmm. we feel so much of our pains have gone, and we just feel like so released. So having that one person in your life...
But it's important to be that one person for that person as well.
Of course, of course. It would.
It has to be a two-way
street. It has to be something mutual.
Yeah.
You have to give it in order to get it. Mm-hmm. So having that person is going to help a lot. So we talked about journaling, practicing some relieving methods in order to stop complaining.
There was this sort of a club, and they had a name too. And their mission was to not complain. And they would have they'd wear a rubber bracelet on their right mm-hmm. wrist.
A reminder it was.
Yes, exactly. And the checkpoint was to not to complain for like 3 weeks, right? Mm-hmm. And even honking at the car in front of you to go faster would be considered as complaint.
Oh, so that would be very difficult.
Yeah, exactly. The point of it was to build up the attitude of content in yourself. Right?
Yeah.
And keep yourself calm and grounded in every situation.
Contentment is very important.
It's
though.
So important. It's
yeah.
like one of the key points of what our holy scriptures describe.
Exactly, yes.
As what makes a good Muslim.
What we and as then, servants of God have to practice.
Exactly. And if you complained in the smallest bit, or even if you complained about someone complaining, you'd have to switch your bracelet to the other hand and then start yeah. your 3 weeks again.
Start from the first square.
Exactly. So when we were talking about practicing, Brother Mudafa, you were saying that practice it now before you turn into that old person. This is an interesting, fun way to do it.
Yeah.
So you can start it with a friend or your partner or your sibling or
whatever. That would be very fun as well.
I think the main lock that we've kind of unkeyed is that complaining is good only when it will help to resolve the issue.
Yeah, that's very
right?
true.
So, and in those cases, you should complain, right? When yes. you know that your complaint is yeah. going to help the situation.
Will
it's
lead
to
a fruitful
right.
end.
That's when you should complain. The second point I wanted to make very quickly is about journaling. Because a lot of people, when you say that to them, they won't actually know how to do it or what to do. They're not writing type people.
Yeah, I know.
Just find a journal or even use your phone and just start writing down words, you know.
Whatever that's running
whatever
inside
is
you.
In your mind, just start writing it down.
A stream of consciousness.
Yeah, yeah.
In the limelight. In Britain, former Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak, whose resignation alongside former Health Secretary Sajid Javid set off the mass walkout that led to British Prime Minister Boris Johnson's downfall, is a controversial figure for Tory leadership in his party, despite his staunch backing from MPs, and is blamed by many Tories for the rapid increase in the tax burden on his watch. We have prepared for you an article written jointly by Heather Stewart, Jessica Elgott and Aubrey Allegretti. The piece is titled Wide Open Race for Tory Leadership Lays Bare UK Party Divisions. Conservative divisions were laid bare on Tuesday, 12th of July, as a wide-open field of eight MPs made it through to the first round of the fractious contest to succeed Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. Despite the 1922 committee setting a threshold of 20 MPs to secure a place on the ballot paper, just three of the 11 declared candidates were eliminated on a frenetic day in Westminster. Former Chancellor of the Exchequer Rishi Sunak is the front-runner among MPs by some margin, with a publicly declared support of more than 40 colleagues, but it remains unclear who will join him in the final two. Conservative MPs will vote in the coming days, with any contender attracting fewer than 30 votes eliminated. Further rounds will follow until the field is narrowed to just two, with Conservative members then making the final decision. Former Secretary of State for Health and Social Care Sajid Javid, whose resignation helped precipitate Boris Johnson's demise, dropped out of the race shortly before the formal announcement of the candidates by 1922 committee chair Graham Brady on Tuesday evening. The former Health Secretary, Sajid Javid, did not immediately endorse any of his rivals. Sir Graham Brady said eight candidates had met the threshold to proceed. They are Kemi Badenoch, Suella Braverman, Jeremy Hunt, Penny Mordaunt, Rishi Sunak, Liz Truss, Tom Tuggenhat, and Nadeem Zahawi. Rishi Sunak, whose resignation alongside Sajid Javid set off the mass walkout that led to Boris Johnson's downfall, is a controversial figure in his party, despite his staunch backing from MPs, and is blamed by many Conservatives for the rapid increase in the tax burden on his watch. The Culture Secretary Nadine Dorries, who announced her support for Liz Truss recently, claimed Dirty Tricks had helped get Jeremy Hunt into the next round. She tweeted, "Team Rishi want the candidate they know they can definitely beat in the final two, and that is Jeremy Hunt." Rishi Sunak's team flatly denied, urging some of his supporters to lend their votes to Jeremy Hunt to help him over the line. A source in Jeremy Hunt's team said, "This is categorically untrue, and we hope all candidates and supporters will campaign on their own merits, rather than attempting to smear opponents." Earlier, three candidates, that is Kemi Badenoch, Rishi Sunak and Tom Tuggenhat, held simultaneous launch events. Tom Tuggenhat, considered to be a centrist, was introduced by his highest profile backer, Anne-Marie Trevelyan, the Trade Secretary. He said his leadership would rise to the challenges of the cost of living crisis in a way his cabinet rivals had not. Tuggenhat said, "In a moment that is so desperate for so many, and when our service is most needed, we have retreated. We have retreated into division when we desperately need unity. When our nation needed our party to function, we retreated into faction. When the moment demanded service, we delivered scandal." Kemi Badenoch was watched at her event by Michael Gove, sacked as Community Secretary by Boris Johnson recently as he fought to save his premiership. In a speech in front of union flags that earned her a standing ovation from a packed room at the Policy Exchange think tank, Badenoch criticised the betrayal of rivals' tax cut pledges, which she said they would not keep. She said she would not enter into a bidding war with MPs who claim "my tax cut is bigger than yours," but she was committed to reducing taxes on businesses, on families and individuals. Penny Mordaunt and Liz Truss are expected to launch their campaign soon, with both vying to be the Stop Rishi candidate who could win over the party membership. Throughout the day, the backers of contenders who had not yet met the threshold of 20 supporters frantically tried to win around their colleagues. The Home Secretary, Priti Patel, announced just before 2 p.m. local time that she would not be standing. There had been rumours that she might strike a deal with her fellow Brexiter, Braverman, but Priti Patel declined to publicly back any other candidate. She claimed in a statement, "Like all Conservative MPs and party members, I will be listening to cases being put forward by the candidates standing for the leadership of the party, and trust the contest will be conducted in a good spirit that brings our party together." Raymond Chishti, the little-known backbencher who had launched a quixotic leadership bid despite having no declared supporters, withdrew. Rishi Sunak was introduced at his launch by the Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab. Raab claimed the former Chancellor was a true Conservative, imbued with the values of enterprise, hard work and family. "Rishi Sunak's values are our values," he said. Grant Shapps, the Transport Secretary, also attended Sunak's slickly managed event, having folded his own campaign as it became clear he was unlikely to secure 20 backers. Other senior supporters present included Oliver Dowden, who resigned as Conservative Party chair after the disastrous by-elections in Tiverton and Honiton and Wakefield, and the former International Trade Secretary, Liam Fox. Rishi Sunak had no new policies to announce, claiming he wanted to have a grown-up conversation with the public instead of making lavish promises on tax cuts, as some of his rivals have done. With some MPs charging he has been disloyally plotting against Johnson, Sunak paid tribute to the outgoing Prime Minister, claiming, "Boris Johnson is one of the most remarkable people I've ever met, and whatever the commentators say, he has a good heart." He denied that Johnson's controversial former Chief of Staff, Dominic Cummings, had any involvement in his campaign or would be handed a role in any government I have the privilege to lead. Shortly before Rishi Sunak's launch, Nadine Dorries made a statement alongside the Brexit Opportunities Minister Jacob Rees-Mogg, in which they both said they would support Liz Truss. Nadine Dorries claimed, "She's probably a stronger Brexiter than both of us. She has consistently argued for low tax policies," adding that it was important to ensure the 2019 Tory manifesto was enacted. Jacob Rees-Mogg highlighted the fact that Liz Truss had argued in cabinet against Rishi Sunak's tax rises.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Fiqh or jurisprudence is an Islamic knowledge and is ranked
The Holy Prophet of Islam is the example
of
Self-purification is the most significant
factor.
Imamat is a living principle in the history of Islam and Shiism. This is Ulama Speech, the best selection of the speeches of prominent Shia scholars.
In the name of Allah, the Beneficent, the Merciful, welcome to another episode of the program Ulama's Speech. In this episode, we invite you to listen to the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseiniye Qumi. Stay tuned.
جوانی داشته باشه ولی استفاده چیه این که انسان وقت خودش رو به فراغت بگذرانه
How can we benefit from our young age? Does it mean to do anything we like? Is it all right to spend all our time for leisure and amusements? As we read in a fragment of Ayah 37 of Surah Al-Fatir, Did we not give you a life long enough that one who is heedful might take admonition? Now, the best age to be heedful of the admonitions of our deeds is before we reach 18.
چقدر بزرگان ما مواظب فرصت‌های خودشون بودن و متأسفانه امروز بد جور فرصت
Our great elite and scholars were very much concerned about their deeds. Unfortunately, in today's world, many of our chances to grow spiritually are missed. Many talents are ruined in schools, universities, and seminaries all across the Muslim lands. In other words, in comparison to the past generation, we are not producing great graduates from houses or Islamic seminaries and universities. One of the main reasons is that we are not heedful enough about the spiritual life of our young generation before the age of 18. Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Husseiniye Qumi. To find out more about this program, log on to our website parstoday.com/en/Call of Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye. Thank you.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The devastating impact of the coronavirus pandemic and its economic fallout continue to take a toll on the world and provide ample reason to reconsider where taxpayers' money is being spent. Several countries have even come to the conclusion that their budget is better off being spent where it can potentially ameliorate the economic pressure on their citizens. In the US, however, while such reassessments are long overdue along with the trillions of dollars Congress and successive administrations have lavished on the Pentagon, lawmakers have decided to once again shower the Pentagon with cash, even more than what it asked for. Interestingly enough, this comes while the massive US arsenal and fighting force deployed worldwide have proven to be powerless against grave, non-military threats to national security. Gas prices in the U.S. are at an all-time high. Rent prices have set records for the last 13 months straight. Inflation is increasing so sharply that even the cost of basic utilities has risen by nearly 30% in the last 12 months. There are growing fears that the economy is poised to fall into recession. And now, at a time when Americans are fighting to keep roofs over their heads and feed their families, Congress's plan is to authorize a record-setting $838.8 billion in spending to the Pentagon, nearly $40 billion more than what the military asked for.
American taxpayers should be angry. They are angry. Many are not only angry, they are incensed, and they are protesting. But unfortunately, too many elected representatives in this country aren't listening to their constituents. They're listening to the representatives and the lobbyists of the military-industrial complex, such as Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, Boeing, and General Electric. So when you have those companies and so many others that are pouring millions and millions and millions of dollars into the political campaigns of members of Congress and members of the Senate and the president, when they are pouring millions of dollars into their political campaigns, when they spend just an inordinate amount of time on Capitol Hill lobbying for their interests, then you're going to wind up with policies and programs that are sending money to the Pentagon instead of sending money into states for schools and retirement programs and the other types of social welfare programs and that are needed in this country.
The U.S. Congress is on track to give the Pentagon $37 billion more than what the military asked for. And this comes while Congress could use this money to pay for a variety of things Americans desperately need right now, like school lunches, affordable housing, and utility assistance programs. Even just lowering taxes by that amount or giving this money directly to the American people could put more than $100 in the pocket of every single American at a time when they desperately need it. Not only would spending in such ways benefit the individuals and communities that receive them, it would also help revitalize the U.S. economy and make it more equitable to boot. As has been well documented, defense spending is one of the least economically productive ways the government can spend its money. Spending on education, healthcare, and lowering taxes, for example, have all been shown to create more and higher-paying jobs. So why is Congress poised to give government contractors the biggest taxpayer-funded payday they've ever received, despite the heavy economic implications that the move has on the country?
Well, the reason that the United States government is pursuing war strategies is because America is still an imperial hegemon. And so you have people like Tony Blinken and Avril Haines, Samantha Power, Jake Sullivan, Victoria Nuland that are influencing decision makers in policy to try to start fights with Russia, try to start conflicts with China, start to continue to try to start conflicts with Iran to justify this immense military spending.
Pentagon contractors invest heavily in efforts to get more taxpayer money. They've spread their influence and money around the lobbyists, PR firms, and think tanks to ensure that the money is funneled in their way. In short, this is the military-industrial complex, and it is working overtime to raise the Pentagon budget at taxpayers' expense. And while much of Washington is on the racket and will also profit from this wasteful government spending, it's Americans struggling to keep the lights on who will pay the price. President Biden has almost unlimited ways of communicating with the world, but he opted to pen an article posted online Saturday night by the Washington Post to defend his pending West Asia trip in light of the controversies around it. In the piece, he speaks about many issues, including further integrating Israel into the region, Washington's ties with Riyadh, the Saudi-led war in Yemen, the Iran nuclear deal, and more. While most of the matters mentioned in the article are centered around West Asia, they also seem to share another point. The U.S. itself is either complicit in or directly responsible for the very issues it claims that it is trying to solve.
The U.S. Lies through its teeth without stopping a minute. We've seen the debates and discussions about the comprehensive agreement with Iran, which they had promised to renegotiate, and they seem not to be negotiating in good faith. They're trying to paint themselves as innocent, which of course they are not. And they just had a recent rebuff at the G20 meeting in Indonesia, where Mr. Blinken refused to sit down with the leaders of all these states.
Saudi Arabia, infamous for its violations of human rights and under widespread criticism for its bloody war on Yemen as well as the killing of dissident journalist Jamal Khashoggi, is a focal point of Biden's West Asia tour. But despite this, the U.S. president's framing of the Saudi relationship appeared particularly defensive. During his election campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah for its crime. But now he has ironically claimed that ties with Riyadh help promote the U.S.'s foreign policy ambitions. Similar to the other issues, the U.S. president also tried to take fault away from his administration in regard to the Iran nuclear program file by putting the blame on Iran. Biden also stated his readiness to further pressure Tehran despite Tehran's readiness to return to the deal, and this too sheds light on the U.S.'s ironical foreign policy. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the SALT deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forwards with the Abraham Accords, which is the pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran. In the op-ed piece, President Biden says the U.S. helped end the 2021 war on Gaza but fails to condemn Israel for its atrocities and violation of Palestinian rights. Biden also proudly mentions the U.S.'s $4 billion support of Israel. But what does all this demonstrate about the U.S.'s stance on Palestinians who have been subject to Israeli brutality for years now?
Well, the issue of the United States and Israel is a burning issue right now, and the U.S. has acted in a hypocritical way where Russia has attacked special military operation in Ukraine to denazify it. And we know what Nazis are. So, and yet, so the U.S. has spent $40 or $60 billion arming these countries, letting all those Ukrainian youth be killed who were forced into fighting Russia. And yet, with respect to Gaza, 8 months earlier, Israel unleashed a horrible attack on Gaza, and the U.S. hummed and hawed, tried to sort of say, maybe we'll calm things down. They didn't spend $40 billion to arm the resistance against Israel. And that is a term which I call tongue-in-cheek. I don't know whether you know the term. It's sort of a sarcastic term, because obviously the U.S. is not going to do that. But it's related to empire.
The U.S.'s one-sided stance on Israel is also clearly demonstrated in the Shirin Abu Akleh case, where it stopped short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing by Israeli troops, while all other investigations reached the conclusion that the regime troops did in fact murder her. Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seeks not only to integrate the regime further into the region, but also aims to advance its plans to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. And all this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda. After spending his first year and a half in office mostly trying to avoid deeper engagement in West Asia while prioritizing challenges at home and in other parts of the world such as China and Russia, President Biden seems to be making a slight shift towards dedicating more time and attention to West Asia. One of the main purposes of Joe Biden's visit is the so-called deepening of Israel's integration in the region and moving forward with the Abraham Accords, which is the main pillar of normalization deals with Israel. But the latter has raised questions regarding Biden's foreign policies, as Israel itself seems to be the source of the problem in the region, from its atrocities against Palestinians to its continuous attacks on Syria and its repeated threats against Iran.
Well, Israel has been the problem in the Middle East since their inception. And even before that, when they were under British occupation, Palestine was under British occupation, the Zionists were the cause of the problems in the Middle East, going back to the bombing of the King David Hotel. So Israel has been a really terrible neighbor for all of the surrounding countries to them. You mentioned Syria. Yes, I was in Syria several times when Israel was being the aggressor and actively bombing the Syrian people who've done nothing to them. They occupy Syrian territory in the Golan Heights. Israel has been just a terrible neighbor to everyone. They've been abusive of the Palestinian people. I've been to the Palestinian, what they call camps, refugee camps, and these are 70 years old now. These are not new. These are established communities that they refer to as camps. They drove the people off their land. They stole their land that they have no right and no claim to. So yes, Israel is the nexus of the problem in the Middle East.
Now, despite Israeli crimes, Washington seems to not only integrate the regime further into the region, it also aims to advance its plan to upgrade defense cooperation between Israel and the Arabs in the light of the Abraham Accords. Meanwhile, Iran has reiterated that normalization of relations between some Arab countries and Israel encourages and strengthens the regime to continue its crimes. President Ebrahim Raisi in April even compared friendship with Israel to keeping a snake in proximity. Americans have been feeling the economic pressure of inflation in recent months, with surging domestic gasoline prices adding to that burden. There are expectations that President Biden's trip to Saudi Arabia will include a direct request from the kingdom to increase its oil production in the hopes of offsetting the rising costs for American consumers at the pump. During his campaign, Biden had pledged of making Saudi Arabia a pariah. But now, in a move seen by rights advocates as at odds with his promise to put human rights at the heart of U.S. foreign policy, Biden is set to meet with Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman as he struggles to combat record-high U.S. gasoline prices.
Biden has done some very foolish economic policies in the U.S. Initially, like day one after his inauguration, he cut off the Keystone Pipeline, and he turned the United States from an oil exporting country into an oil importing country. What Biden was not counting on was the rest of the world is sanctioning the U.S. and not wanting to deal in dollars, and they're not wanting to supply the U.S. with commodities and or finished goods. So Biden's economic policies have been an unmitigated failure. And so, yes, Biden is going to Saudi Arabia to beg the Saudis to increase oil production.
Meanwhile, the United States is facing accusations of whitewashing the Israeli killing of Palestinian journalist Shirin Abu Akleh after concluding the bullet that killed her likely came from Israeli military gunfire, but stopping short of reaching a definitive conclusion in her killing. Abu Akleh was wearing a press uniform while reporting on an Israeli raid in the occupied West Bank when she was fatally shot in the head on May 11th. Since the killing, several media and human rights organizations have all determined that the Israeli military killed Abu Akleh. All this raises the question of whether the U.S. truly seeks justice and advocates for human rights, or it only claims to do so in order to move forward with its agenda.
The United Nations has warned the Israeli regime against forcible mass eviction of over 1,000 Palestinians from their homes in the Masafer Yatta area of the occupied West Bank.
Evictions that will lead to displacement, if enforced, amount to forced deportation and a grave breach of the Fourth Geneva Convention, and therefore constitute a war crime.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs added that the international humanitarian law imposes an absolute prohibition on the forcible transfer of civilians from or within the occupied Palestinian territories, and that Israeli authorities must put an end to all coercive measures, including planned evictions, demolitions, and military training in it.
Well, the Palestinians have been periodically rising up against this ongoing slow-motion Zionist genocide. It's been going on now. The Palestinians have been resisting this genocide for more than a century since it began, when these settlers started swarming into Palestine against the wishes of the Palestinian people. And so that struggle will, of course, continue. And there will be continuing protests. There are basically ongoing peaceful protests in Palestine. And every now and then, the uprising becomes more of a military nature. And then, of course, the Zionists respond in kind, and all kinds of blood is shed. At the end of the day, the Zionists are continuing their slow-motion genocide, but it isn't happening fast enough to save them. In the long run, the Zionist entity is doomed because it hasn't been able to get the actual acquiescence of the Palestinians, first and foremost, and then secondarily, the people of the region.
A ruling by the Israeli Supreme Court on May 4th allowed for the mass eviction of Palestinians in the area. The Israeli military has designated part of the area as a closed military zone for training, and the regime has sought to remove the communities on this basis. The European ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territories has warned against Israel's planned evictions.
If mass evictions and forcible transfer were to be the case, that would be the biggest forcible transfer for decades.
The official added that the EU hopes that upcoming visits of US President Joe Biden to Israel would put pressure on Israel to fulfill its obligations to protect civilians.
The US could stop Israel from all of its crimes if it absolutely turned and chose that path, but it won't. And the reason, of course, is that there's a lot of Zionist power here in the United States, including in the Biden administration. And they're sending a message by saying, even when Biden goes to the Middle East, and it would be in his interest and the American interest to have the Israelis modify their behavior, they won't do it. They don't need to do it. They're thumbing their nose at the world. And the Zionists have a long track record of things like this. They never compromise. They never try to go the extra mile to be reasonable.
Although the United States has called on the Israeli regime to stop its settlement drive, but in effect it has supported the regime in its crimes against Palestinians. U.S. officials have repeatedly hailed Washington's unwavering support for the regime. They have also turned a deaf ear to growing cries from various international organizations regarding the regime's atrocities. The United States has also vetoed numerous resolutions in the UN Security Council that criticize the regime.
بسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآني جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسان. ودعوتك ربي بقرآني.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وأجل فرجهم.
Thank you so much, respected brothers and sisters, for joining us again. Alhamdulillah, we are doing well with our tajweed rules, and we have done idgham, okay, and just some more examples, inshallah, in Surah Al-Ghashiyah we'll work on. And that will be all about idgham. Then we'll go through the last rule, not the last rule, the third rule, iqlab, right?
Yes.
And then ikhfa, inshallah. So, Surah Al-Ghashiyah, alhamdulillah, we worked, we recited up to ayah 9, 8, okay, inshallah. Now we will go through ayah 9, 10, and to the last. أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم.
آية 9. لسعيها راضية.
لسعيها راضية.
في جنة عالية.
في جنة عالية.
في جنة عالية.
في جنة عالية.
لا تسمع فيها لاغية.
لا تسمع فيها لاغية.
أحسن. So these three ayahs, okay? لسعيها راضية. راضية. We have tanween, but in the ayah itself, we do not have any rule. Yes?
Yes.
But look at the previous ayah. وجوه يومئذ ناعمة. دون. Let's connect it with the next ayah. لسعيها. We have a rule. Yes? دون. Tanween. Then what is the next letter in the next ayah?
لام.
لام. إدغام or no?
Yes.
Yes, Hussein Musa?
Yes.
Idgham.
Yes.
With ghunnah or without ghunnah, Hussein Musa?
Without ghunnah.
Na'imatun, tanween, then lam. Yarmalun or no?
Yes.
Okay. Idgham, yes? Idgham rule.
Yes.
Is it with ghunnah or without ghunnah?
Without ghunnah.
MashaAllah. Why? The letter? Lam is lam. Here. Great. So, we just merge it, okay? Tul, tul, that's it. Tul, okay? Tul. So, when we merge, okay, that noon sound is merged with the lam.
Yes.
Then that dhamma, not the tanween dhamma, only that dhamma is connected with the lam, okay?
Mm-hmm.
The harakat dhamma is connected to the letter lam, okay?
So
how do we say?
Na'imatun li sa'iha.
Ah, na'imatun li sa'iha. Great. Na'imatun li sa'iha. Okay. So remember one thing, okay? Whenever we have hamzatul wasl that we studied in level 2, we apply one rule with tanween plus hamzatul wasl, okay? We apply with the kasra, for example. If yawma idhi nil haq, we have a kasra that we talked in level 2. But whenever we have tanween, fatha, kasra, dhamma, plus any other letters, not hamzatul wasl, like here, lam we have. Okay? If that tanween is dhamma, dhamma must be connected to that letter, okay? If that is fatha, fatha. If that is kasra, kasra. The noon sound will be
finished.
Like, omitted, okay? The noon sound. It will be merged to the next letter. Like, for example, here we have na'imatun tanween we have. Since noon is merged with lam, okay? Tul noon is merged to lam. Then the lam sound will be bold here, okay? So only the dhamma will be here, not tanween anymore. Yes? Na'imatu. As if we don't have any noon here. Noon sound. Na'imatul. Yes? Suppose there is no tanween. We have ta with dhamma, no tanween. Again, when you connect it with the next ayah, tul it becomes. Yeah?
Yes.
That's it. So, but tanween is here, okay? Because we have tashdeed here. Look, tashdeed is also there, okay? It tells you that na'imatun, this tun is connected with the lam. Tashdeed is there, okay? So how do you recite?
Na'imatul.
Na'imatul. Idgham without
gunna.
Na'imatul. Wrong. Na'imatul. Easy.
Yes.
Let's recite these two ayahs together.
Wujuhun yawma'idhin na'imatun lisa'iha radiyah.
Okay. So, the next ayah, fi jannatin aliyah. Jannatin. Jannatin. Noon is sakin plus noon. Idgham, right?
Yes.
But
yes.
With ghunna or without ghunna? Noon we have. Jannatin.
With ghunna.
With ghunna. Why? Because we have noon. Yamun. Yes. Noon.
Fi jannatin. Fi jannatin.
Right?
Yes.
Jannatin. Tanween.
Yes.
What is the next letter?
Ayn.
Ayn.
Throat letters.
Izhar.
Fi
jannatin aliyah.
Right?
Fi jannatin aliyah.
Recite.
في جنة عالية.
أحسن. Okay, the next ayah. لا تسمع فيها لاغية. We do not have an example. لاغية we have. لاغية فيها is إخفاء that we will talk about. Next three ayahs. Ready?
Yes.
فيها عين جارية. فيها عين جارية. فيها سرر مرفوعة. فيها سرر مرفوعة. وأكواب موضوعة. وأكواب موضوعة.
هذا القرآن يوحدنا لطريق الخير يوجهنا. الله تعالى أنزله ورسول الله معلمنا. ورسول الله معلمنا. هذا القرآن.
Want to learn Quran at home? Join us in our Quranic class. Let's recite the Quran.
Let's recite the two more ayahs as well. ونمارق مصفوفة.
ونمارق مصفوفة.
وزرابي مبثوثة. Okay, so these five ayahs, now let's go and take a look at the tanween and noon sakin, okay? So in the ayah fiha aynun jariya, we have the ikhfarul aynun, then jim, inshallah we'll talk about it. Fiha sururum marfu'a, sururun.
Sururum.
So sururun it is, yes?
Yes.
Tanween. Yeah. But after tanween?
Meem.
Meem. Which idgham, ikhfa, idhar,
iqlam? Idgham.
Idgham.
Ghunna, without ghunna or
with ghunna?
With ghunna.
With ghunna. Recite it, Hussein Ruhullah.
فيها سرر مرفوعة.
أحسن، سرر مرفوعة.
فيها سرر مرفوعة.
فيها سرر مرفوعة.
أحسن. The next آية وأكواب موضوعة. أكواب
موضوعة.
وأكواب موضوعة.
وأكواب موضوعة.
Okay, great. ونمارق
مصفوفة.
Okay. وزرابي
مبثوثة.
Okay. Now we will, let's recite all these five ayahs together.
Ooh.
All right? Five ayahs, right? Four, one, two, three, four, five. Yes.
Five.
Five. But make sure, okay, that when the ayah ends, the next ayah starts with wow, right? And فيها سرر مرفوعة. Then the next ayahs start with wow. You have to merge the tanween with wow as well. Idgham, right?
Yes.
With ghunnah or without ghunnah?
With ghunnah.
With ghunnah. Let's recite. Okay, let's recite. فيها. Let's take a deep breath, okay? Because it's too long. Ready?
Yes.
Listen to me, okay? Then, inshallah, repeat.
فيها عين جارية فيها سرر مرفوعة وأكواب موضوعة ونمارق مصفوفة وزرابي مبثوثة.
That's too long. take a deep breath.
فيها عين جارية فيها سرر مرفوعة وأكواب موضوعة ونمارق مصفوفة وزرابي مبثوثة.
That was too long, right?
No.
But we did it.
I stopped at Mawdu'a.
But I continued.
Yes.
No problem.
Too.
Okay.
I stopped.
So let's recite these three ayahs then. Four ayahs. فيها سرر مرفوعة وأكواب موضوعة. Or these three ayahs only. وأكواب موضوعة ونمارق مصفوفة وزرابي مبثوثة. Okay. One, two, three. All together, okay?
وأكواب موضوعة ونمارق مصفوفة وزرابي مبثوثة.
عبد الباسط, شيخ عبد الباسط, the reciter, okay? He recites this surah very well, very beautifully. I really love it. Okay, so let's go to the next ayah. أَفَلَا يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَى الْإِبِلِ كَيْفَ خُلِقَتْ. Okay? وَإِلَى السَّمَاءِ كَيْفَ رُفِعَتْ وَإِلَى الْجِبَالِ كَيْفَ نُصِبَتْ وَإِلَى الْأَرْضِ كَيْفَ سُطِحَتْ. Okay, up to سُطِحَتْ. These four, five ayahs, I think.
Ooh, yes. Together?
No, just one.
No,
one. Okay.
Together.
Listen up.
أَفَلَا يَنْظُرُونَ إِلَى الْإِبِلِ كَيْفَ خُلِقَتْ. أفلا ينظرون إلى الإبل كيف خلقت وإلى السماء كيف رفعت وإلى السماء كيف رفعت وإلى السماء كيف رفعت وإلى السماء كيف رفعت وإلى الجبال كيف نصبت وإلى الجبال كيف نصبت وإلى الأرض كيف سطحت وإلى الأرض كيف سطحت.
Okay. Can you find any example for Tanween or Noon Sakin here? In these four ayahs. Five ayahs, right?
Oh,
yes. One, five, two, five. Three, four. Four ayahs.
No. Yanzarun.
Yan.
Zarun.
Zarun?
Ana. Zurun.
Yanzurun. Okay. Yanzurun. Yeah. What is the example?
Nun is sakin after it.
Za. Is it throat letter?
No.
Yermanun letter?
No.
Iqlab letter?
No.
What letter?
Ikhfa.
Ikhfa. But we will study, inshallah. It's the rest of the letters, yes? Now you are very expert, okay?
What about innama?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And after that, anta.
Where is
innama? No. Go to the next ayah.
Innama have two noons.
No, we do not. We have not recited it yet. فَذَكِّرْ إِنَّمَا أَنْتَ مُذَكِّرْ. We only have this one.
I will say yes? In the future.
And that is not idgham example and like ilhar example.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So, inshallah, in the coming session, we will go through the next rules. But before we end, let's give thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International School. Thank you so much. وَالْحَمْدُ Rabbil Alameen. وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد وعجل فرجهم
Let's recite the Quran A joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools. ذكر وموعظة ونور فيه شفاء للصدور وشفيعنا يوم النشور آياته تروي المدى وصفاته نبع الهدى نرقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان
IRIB English Radio. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.